This figure in Rembrandt's etching is looking up, obviously, from a working table, a working desk. The globe, the stacks of books, the skull beyond. All of this Rembrandt has left in a kind of a just a cross-hatched form. It's not important. The only thing that's important is to understand that the man is working. He is working with his mind. That's what is important here. And Rembrandt just gives us enough so that we can see the man's working with his mind, but in the act of working with his mind, he, in a semi-startled, semi-dedicated way, looks up. Something in his work has happened, and he, in a surprised and yet in a directed way, looks up. And when he looks up to see. And what does he see? He sees a light. But he sees the light so clearly, with such penetration, that in the light there's a mandala. But it's not a mandala of images. It's not a mythic mandala. It's a symbolic mandala which has only letters. And the letters of that mandala are very precise. Now, Rembrandt went to a lot of trouble to make that mandala perfect. He was a champion of perfection. Rembrandt and Beethoven really champions of, they got in their art exactly what they wanted to get. They had enough talent to do that. Now that anagram, that inscription, they call it an amulet over here. And indeed, it probably could be, if one had that made up, I've never seen anyone make it up, incidentally, that would be a very interesting amulet to have. The amulet reads, Algar, Algastna, Amertet, Gaglaram, Adam, the Inri. Now, most of that anagrammical wording one could figure out, but it's not necessary to figure out, because the pattern is that as one looks at that symbol, the eye moves in a clockwise fashion around the rim and then moves into the second level and moves around clockwise and then moves to the center, and the center is a quaternary that converges, so that the anagram, instead of being three concentric circles like a target, is a close spiral going in. So that symbolically, it's the last bit of a spiral of indefinite expansion. This is just the core of it, where it goes into the vanishing point. Wasn't it Marshall McLuhan that did a book with that title, The Vanishing Point? Through the Vanishing Point? This is that. This is that quality. Rembrandt is showing a Faustian figure who has been buried in study of the mind, looking up and sees the core of the mind. What is the core of the mind? The core of the thinking mind is symbolically expressed in this last tight round spiral that vanishes. The quaternary in which the vanishing point occurs is INRI. Which, of course, is designation for Jesus. It's the symbol that's tacked on to the cross. And so in Rembrandt's time, this would have been, for Jews, for Christians, for anybody, it would have been recognizable as the ultimate anagram for a mysterious person. It's not the Jesus, the man, it's the transpersonal, resurrected, supernatural quality of divinity in the man that is still there. So it's like that. But notice that as one looks at this, the only word, other word that instantly one would recognize is Adam, but the Adam is upside down. Adam is upside down. The first man, the symbolically first man, upside down, and on top of it, like a sun on a moon, is the ultimate man. But there's something else that's there. And one in Rosicrucian symbols would recognize the hand that comes out and is pointing is not pointing at all to this esoteric amulet, but is pointing instead to a mirror beside. And if one looks then at the figure and you follow the line of vision of the eye of the figure of Faustus looking up, he's looking at the mirror. He can't see the mystical light with its symbolic anagram in it, but he can see the mirror, and in the mirror he can see it. But behind his head is a skull, and if you follow the line of vision of the skull, which goes right over the Sahasrara chakra of Faustus, it goes right to the center of that anagram, right to the center of that mandala. The eyeless skull foundation of the man sees with no eyes the center of the vanishing point of God. But man's eyes in this world can only see the mirror image of it. And so when he sees the mirror image of it, he has to make a transformation in what he sees. He has to transpose. He has to know that what he's seeing is not that divinity really, but is the reflection of it, and make a transpositional adjustment in what he does. Not to imitate the reflection, but to understand that he's seeing a reflection. That at the best he can only see a reflection, but that the reflection is true. It's not just an imitation. It's not a second-hand semblance. But he cannot live on a direct basis to that semblance. He has to make a computational notation for himself to transpose it back, not to live according to the mirror, but to live according to what the mirror has shown. One does not live according to the image of God, but by the divine presence. This adjustment is the adjustment that a mature human being makes, and it separates one forever from that kind of mythic level, pre-self level, and makes the person real. That on this basis, when this occurs in a human being, there's no regression back, there's no sliding back, there's no subconscious tendency to then fall back into mythic patterns. Now notice, there's nothing derisive about mythic patterns. They're absolutely essential and necessary. But if one continues to use those, there is no possibility of history. There's no possibility of a sequence in time based on the divine presence coming into manifestation. And that's the difference. So that at this, the 12th session of our art, the art of person making, we want to understand that there's no possibility of history whatsoever until we make that kind of an adjustment, until we consciously understand that that can be done, needs to be done, and then do it. Notice that the trigger in the whole thing, the superior person, is not the person who just understands this, but then who does it, who lives that life. That's what's important. And it's not important that one follows some kind of a plan so much, but that one tries to live this life in terms of a resonance of that deep self, a pulse of the integrity of that deep self. Now, and I'll give you a break, the religious way in which this is done, East and West, is sounding a bell. The sound of the bell is symbolically what the pulse of reality is from the deep self, the divine within. When that occurs, that pulsed resonance restructures so that instead of getting a coordination on an external basis, one gets a restructuring on an internal basis. The saying is that for the first time one sees things as they are. Not as you had computed them to be, but as they are. It's a kind of a very sophisticated, almost like a late 20th century mathematical process of renormalization, of bringing back out of the symbolic ideational level where one had been working, but renormalizing, bringing it back into a practicality where one can deal with it in terms of this world. And that's the process that's there. The other Rembrandt print shows the figure meditating. Notice here that the light is coming in from a vast arched window, and fortuitously in this Xerox of this copy of it, the arch is blurred into a wash of light going up, and almost a door-like appearance is there. This is gratis this is a gift from the spirit. This is exactly what is there, but you can't see it in the original print. Notice that in a complement, if you follow what appears to be the door in the window, and you follow that with your fingers, you put your finger on top of the door in the window and your thumb on the bottom, and run that line down, it goes all the way down to a fire in the lower right-hand corner, and you notice for the first time that the fire is being tended. Now that's an old woman tending that fire. That fire is the hearth of the home, and it's in a direct parallel line to the light of the world. The hearth and the home and the light of the world are linked together. And if you follow that line, you see that it bisects at about one-third of the length of it, of the curving stairwell, the spiraling stairwell. So that there is a presentation here, almost of a Tai Chi, almost of a Rembrandt kind of a yin-yang symbol, the male-female, the hearth light, the skylight. But the two together are the focus, and the spiral stair going into light and into dark. Light into darkness and coming around into light again, but the stair that comes into light the second time is the bottom of the stair. So that one can begin on this path the way that you see in this world, but you can only continue on it if you're willing to go into the darkness. And you can only come out of the darkness if you can go on the path on dimensions that you can't see with the eyes of this world, but you see in clear light. That's the esoteric meaning that's here. And believe me, Rembrandt was capable of putting it in. Let's take a break. you can see how one of the basic principles of self-enfoldment is for whatever worldly forms there are to breathe in the unformed background so that it's just like the yogic principle that in order to live, you have to breathe something which is not you into the center of you. But if you try and hold on to it, that leads to death. You have to let it go again. That's the pulse of life that is real. And so breath has become a symbol for what's what, for how to do it. The heart beat pulses, sends blood through the cardiovascular system. That is real. That is how it happens. Here from the Sonnets of Orpheus, Rilke puts it into artistic language. And we're going to use Sonnets to Orpheus next week. So you might get yourself a copy of it in any translation. Here is from the first part, the 13th Sonnet to Orpheus. Rounded apple, pear, and banana, gooseberries. Does not all this convey life and death into your mouth? It's there. Read it on a child's face any day when it tastes them. What infinity! Can't you feel inside your mouth the growing mysteriousness and where words were a flowing of sudden release discovery? Dare to say what apple has implied. Sweetness, concentrated, self-repressing, slowly yielding to the tongue's caressing, growing awake, transparent, clarified, double-meaninged, sunshine-full, terrestrial, oh, experience, feeling, joy, celestial. We'll open next week with that same poem. We'll come right back to it. Now we've looked at Rembrandt and Rilke and St. Ephrem and Atisa. We've looked at real first-class genius in the human heritage. But we ourselves here are trying to pull a trigger. We're trying to make happen, trying to make come into being, trying to have that birth moment of consciousness on that numinous level. So I'm stretching it today, pressing it today. By coming weekly, we're building up a rhythm. And however much we're able to sustain that, we have a momentum. And in that momentum, a sudden surge carries the victory. It's always been referred to as a victory. He who finds himself is the victor. The image of the angels blowing the trumpets. When Gabriel hits the high C, someone has made it. Without the rhythm, there would be no sensitivity to that pulse that carries through. if one is not in motion already, that dynamic simply spins you around, makes you dizzy, knocks you down. If you're an egotistical target, it'll knock you down. You can have a heart attack, whatever it is, that will do it. But if you're in motion and you're in a rhythmic motion, that pulse of real energeia, like a ringing of a bell, it illuminates, it awakens. We need to turn to our masks and see what we have brought. Are there any works of art that we have not been able to get to? Some of them I know, like Gustavo's, are too large to bring. So we have to do something else about them. But let's come to our masks. Let me begin with Ed. Ed, you brought your mask?
Yes.
Okay, let's start with Ed on the mask. Let's look at a couple of masks.
Yes. Preliminary to a painting.
Okay. You might have to walk that around. It's hard to see. This is the preliminary sketch, is that right?
Yeah.
And when was this sketch done, chronologically?
Most of it 2 weeks ago.
Walk around a little bit, Ed, if you can. Yeah, turn slowly so people can see the profile. Yeah. And there are two profiles. What is the mask of?
Well, I work at a computer typing medical things, medical transcribing, so that's...
Hold it up while you talk and we'll look at it. Yeah. Yeah, just in your lap is fine. So it's a mask of your work role.
Yeah.
Do you look like that when you work?
Computer screen, and then I have write something on it. I was thinking of some medical terms, but I decided to put date and time, which is like what comes up when you sort of boot the thing up. And then I wanted to put some, and I was thinking that I was going to write some terms in there that I might transcribe, that I put a few muscles, facial muscles there in pink, and then just wrote what they are on the muscles, and then for the teeth I just have as a keyboard, just numbers and letters. And it's all, this is all occurs on half of the mask.
Pardon?
Creativity.
Turn the mask towards us and let us see while she talks. Half the mask is taken up with the designations. The muscles are labeled, the scientific names for the muscles. The glass is the like a computer screen, and it's labeled with the boot up initial designation. And the other half of the mask is open for creativity. It says, when you put the mask on, notice, put it on once, notice how the only eye that we're able to see of Ed's is through that other side. Cannot see his eye through the screen. But it's Ed's eye that sees the screen. So the one eye seeing the other. So if you folded that mask in upon itself, Ed's eye would be seeing the screen, and the blank open part of the mask would be flush against the labeled part of the mask. Half the roll is labeled, and half the roll is open or unlabeled. Sylvie says creative. So it's a split roll. Do you feel that way? We take it that the teeth, that's a grimace and not a smile, or is that a smile? Are you grinning and bearing it?
I would say probably a grimace.
Grimace. You've grinned and bared it so long that now you're barely grimming it. It is a Snoopy smile. When he's guilty, right?
Yeah, right.
When he's guilty, he smiles that way.
And also, I think the fact that he works on computers, half of his mind is there, and the other half is somewhere else. You know, you could work with like a part of your energy there, and part is allowed to just potential.
Yeah, what's the subject on the computers all the time? Man. But man in a physiological diagrammatic reduction. There are no people on that screen. It's just the diagrammatic reduction of their condition. And so Ed's very sensitive to that. He's also sensitive to the fact that he is in that role of having to deal with that all the time and not being sucked into that. So the other half of the mask is featureless except for the opening which allows his real eye to see. That's the only way you can see through that mask, isn't it? Or can you see through the glass, too?
I can't. Just the one.
Just the one. So you have but one eye when you wear the mask. That roll allows you but one eye. While you're in the roll, the eye is the screen. When you're out of the roll, you try to put that screen eye behind you, away from you. So the mask is a mask of a roll which reduces you one way or the other to one eye.
Yeah, it does. It's funny that you know, as I do type a lot of psychiatry work, and I type a lot about human suffering and so forth, and in about people being ill and this and that, and yet then somehow I have real insights about kind of an overview of the whole situation, where I'm able to stop clearly and see. I stop and I look out the window, and then I think, and it's just mind-boggling what occurs to me, the context, or you know, I would want to try to, you know, explicate, you know, various things, you know, but almost every day something happens where I see, well, just for example, Friday, it occurred to me that life has a cause, or things have a, or suffering has a cause, and that might sound real simple or banal or something like that, but it kind of hit me like a sledgehammer, because it was sort of like, in terms of the noble truths, you know, that all these things have a cause, and that they can be, and the cause can be seen, and when it's seen, then it can be understood, like the 12 links of interdependent origination in Buddhism. And it just sort of hit me after typing away at this stuff, you know, and these reports, these psych reports.
Exactly. Whatever. Exactly. And it's like if you looked at the intellectual form of the pratityasamutpada, that 12 dependent chain, it's an endless chain. And the only way out of that chain is to look at the chain as a whole and see through it. And so one of your eyes is able to see the designations quite clearly, but it's only the other eye that you really can see it all as a whole and look through it. So that mask, that grimace, is also paradoxically the smile of triumph at the same time. There is a victory in that smile. That's the Snoopy echo to the smile. The smile is not a smile of defeat. And it's not a smile of some cynic who's really cemented into that thing. It's a smile of somebody who, in a way, even if just subconsciously, has already been freed from the polarity that ostensibly is there. The mask is a polarity. Incidentally, that form of mask in Chinese opera is the devil mask. The Chinese opera devil mask is like that. One half the mask is a swirl of too intense feeling, and the other half doesn't have any feeling at all. In other words, to the Chinese, the essence of the demonic is that half of you is anesthetized and the other half is just a swirl with uncontrollable feeling. You see, if you're all uncontrolled, then you're unconscious in it, and there's no demonic. And if you're all anesthetized, you can't. It's only when the polarity is there. Notice that there are two ways out of that dilemma. You can let go, and no matter which way that you go excessively, you're out of it. It's just that you don't know you're out of it. The psychotic is freed from the neurotic condition. It's just unfortunate that he doesn't know it. He's no longer bothered by the neuroses.
They're not after him.
They've got him. Well, thank you, Ed.
I would like to say that, speaking for myself, my experience has always been that you have this profound realization, and then you look at it a minute or two later and you say, my God, but it's so simple. But I've come to accept that that's the way a profundity is. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is, as you were describing how you, if you will, see through your work, you said, I'm typing away, and then I stop and I look out the window. And I think that gets back to Roger's point about
the play, the Euripides play, The Bacchae, what the act of the supreme spiritual act of remembering is to look at the sky.
That's right. That's right. Notice the artistic comportment, though, in this. Notice that this mask is not made on a ritual level, but on an artistic level. It's just like Rembrandt's engraving of Faustus here. The engraving itself is an expression of esoteric magic. But the fact that someone could make this engraving makes that person an artist. A magician would be in the engraving. An artist is able to put that whole experience in the engraving and make it. The difference between a magician and an artist is an asymptotic jump in capacity. That's why, like, in the earliest indications of our species, like in the cave paintings at Lascaux or Altamira and everything, to just have painted the animals on the wall is certainly a magic procedure to ensure the hunt and so forth and all that. But to have arranged the caves as cathedrals with galleries and processes, phases of initiation, and then to have sealed it by putting the impress of the human hand makes it a work of art. Makes them Paleolithic temples rather than just collections of magical formulae. And that's 20-some thousand years ago. So you can see our capacities really, really are firmly in place. Our only problem in this time is that we don't believe it. It's almost like we obstinately refuse to believe it. It's a strange condition. Next mask is, go ahead. Yeah. Translucent.
No, clear. You know, it's a clear light. Right. And that other side, he has kept a clear light.
Right. Gene's bringing in a lot of material from the Thursday lecture series on the Pythagoras tradition. No, that's fine. That's excellent, because that is in that situation, too, and has been following it. And so that's right. And your integrating of the insights is very appropriate and truthful about Ed, too, in this case in particular.
Because Ed goes to the Thursday night class, so maybe he picked it up, too, and he didn't
picked up a lot, that's for sure. Let's try just one more thing. Would somebody else put Ed's mask on and let Ed see the mask on someone else? Just, yeah, put the earphones and the whole thing on and just let him look. Okay, and let Ed see his mask on someone else. Just let him look for a minute. Let his insight open up to that. This is the essence of therapeutic. This is the Zen core of drama. Right there. Yes. Yes.
When he had the mask on and went looking to everybody, the way he moved was really very interesting, very outgoing, the opposite of his personality.
Stylized.
Yeah.
Like he was doing a community ceremony.
He was happily lurking with his mask. He was haunting us the way that he's haunted by, excuse my French, the goddamn situation. And we all know that. We all know
that.
How
did you feel about that? Because it was fun to watch you. I noticed the same.
Thank you, Delar.
It was really wonderful. Very gracious.
Yeah, I would, through my one eye, I would focus on each person successively. So that was kind of fun to zero in on.
So now when you look out the window, you can remember our faces and look through our faces into our nature, and we're there with you, ever and always. Another mask. Did I see you, Don, digging out a mask back there?
I didn't dig it up.
Okay. Let's get to Don. I'm sensing Don's energy here.
Oh, you are? Well,
yeah.
I'm surprised.
It's
that may have been my reluctance. anyway, it's just a shadow. No.
Two-sided mask. Gingivitis.
I thought I did right. I thought.
Walk us around with it, there, Don. Is that after Ed's tooth mask?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. There must be something synchronistic to this.
Can't you just see somebody walking out the street now?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot.
It's wonderful. You miss Piggy in there.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Oh, I know there's a lot to it. I work with computers as well, my title is customer engineer. So even if I don't get the equipment working, I have to make the customers as happy as possible. So I try to. If people are interested in things that I might. As well, I kind of present myself at times as the man of the world here with all this knowledge of the arts, and I have a JPL of the sciences, and people like to talk about relationships and whatever, what have you, books and religion and nature, and this is my man of the world.
Turn it round once so we can see the structure of the mask. Yeah, hold that up once.
Oh, and from this?
Yeah, just hold that up.
Right, that's why I started right here. So.
Yeah.
And all my other masks have been circular, and I just, I was going to round the edges or do something else, add something to it, but I just like this kind of, plain old kind of, form with just the and after completing it, oh, but gingivitis, let me mention that.
By all means.
I limited myself to a number of periodicals, and this was the largest word in all of these books. You know, it's like, you know, here was this, so it's like a plague of the 90s. People don't, you know, I guess it's as esoteric as you can get it. And what I took from it was I ingest a lot of information or whatever, but if